Well, you know, you sometimes hear from people that the liturgy itself is a barrier to reaching out with the Word of God and the good news of Jesus Christ. And I believe that's just a bunch of baloney.
Pastor Will Wheaton on his presentation, Classical Christian Worship at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference this summer in Collinsville, Illinois.
The liturgy itself is overwhelmingly the very Word of God by which the outreach takes place. And it is an incredibly crafted balance of stuff that stays the same and of stuff that changes. So it has stability and variety automatically built into it, and it frees up the pastor to work on proclaiming the mystery of Christ that that particular liturgy is holding up for the people on that day. I think it's a great outreach tool rather than thinking of it as something that's a barrier.
Register for the Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois at issuesetc.org.
I agree with you 100%.
Wow, okay.
The compelling argument is on the side of homosexuals. Mm-hmm. That's where the compelling argument is. We're Americans. We just want to be treated like everybody else. That is a compelling argument. And to deny that, you've got to have a very strong argument on the other side.
And the argument
and the other side hasn't been able to do anything but thump the Bible.
Their best argument thus far has been, well, marriage is an institution that for 2,000 years has been about a man and a woman creating babies.
That's right.
And procreation.
The procreation
today,
is a strong...
But look how society has changed. I mean, people, they talk today about would we be okay passing a law saying people over 55 can't get married because they're not likely to have babies.
Knock the music off for a minute. I got one more thing. I support civil unions, I always have, mm-hmm. all right? And the gay marriage thing, I don't feel that strongly about it one way or the other.
But then you leave it to the states.
I think the state should do it.
That's an excerpt from a segment of the O'Reilly Factor featuring Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly of Fox News. They don't believe, but both of them together seem to find no real compelling argument against same-sex marriage, or at least if they don't find it, they don't find it being made by the opponents of same-sex marriage. Is that true? Bill O'Reilly says they haven't really mounted a compelling argument. They just thumped their Bibles, and all the good arguments are on the sides of the advocates of same-sex marriage. And he says their best argument, we're Americans, we just want to be treated like everyone else. Joining us for this second hour of the program to get a reaction to that, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, a little bit later, we're going to answer the question, is Easter a pagan holiday? Pastor Joseph Abrahamson will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live on this Tuesday afternoon, April the 9th, and thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at Issues ETC. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for more than 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
There's a lot to react to, but first of all, what about the contention made by both Bill O'Reilly and Megyn Kelly, that no compelling argument has been made by the opponents of same-sex marriage? All they've done is thump their Bibles.
Well, they've obviously never listened to me or anybody else at the Ruth Institute, because we make non-religious arguments all day long. As you probably know, I have a little pamphlet called 77 Non-Religious Reasons to Support Man-Woman Marriage. So, obviously, if he thinks there aren't any non-religious reasons, he simply hasn't been looking or paying attention. And, you know, if you look at the way he treated some of his guests, at the way he treated Laura Ingraham, for example, when she came on and tried to offer him an explanation, you know, he basically didn't give her 5 minutes to speak uninterrupted before he started a kind of food fight with her, you know. So it can only be that they're not listening or not looking in the right places.
Bill O'Reilly contends that the compelling argument being made by the advocates of same-sex marriage is, we're Americans, we just want to be treated like everyone else. What's your response?
Well, you know, look, you have to understand, what is the essential public purpose of marriage? The essential public purpose of marriage is not to sell wedding cakes and floral arrangements. The essential public purpose of marriage is to attach mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. So as soon as you see that that's the essential public purpose, then you see right away that same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples are not the same with respect to that purpose. And treating different things differently is perfectly appropriate. It's not only not discrimination, it's actually sensible and sound policy. So the advocates for redefining marriage are thinking no further than the wedding day. You know, if all marriage was about was about that we could have a two-guy topper on the top of our wedding cake instead of a man and a woman, or we could have two women on top of the wedding cake. If that's all it was about, I'd give it to you that they have a good argument. But as soon as you get past their wedding day and you start looking at what the real essential purpose of marriage is in the first place, then you come to see that once you're past the wedding day, they aren't equal and can't be made to be equal because children don't enter into a same-sex union in anything like the same way that they enter into an opposite-sex union. And you really need different legal institutions to accommodate those natural realities.
Well, now, Megyn Kelly's response to the procreative purpose argument for man-woman marriage is, look, we're not writing laws to prohibit marriage for people over 55 who are very unlikely to procreate. What do you say?
Well, look, you know, Abraham and Sarah were obviously outliers and exceptional cases. And that the fact that two 85-year-olds get married and hold hands in their nursing home together, that we have always allowed that, that has always been permitted, and no one has ever thought for a single moment that that would require you to rewrite birth certificates and remove the word mother and father from the birth certificate, or that it would require you to change the marriage licenses and remove the words husband and wife from all of the legal code. And yet we know for a fact that the very first thing that has to happen when you remove the gender requirement for marriage in order to accommodate same-sex couples is that you have to go through and take out all the gendered language out of the law. So that tells you straight away that there's something more afoot here than whether people can in a particular instance, procreate. Now, the fact is that a same-sex union is structurally incapable of procreation, and two 85-year-olds are simply accidentally incapable of procreating. In fact, every married couple eventually becomes sterile if they live long enough, right? And that's not a barrier to marriage or upsetting to marriage or anything else. It doesn't mean their marriage is over. It means that the purpose of marriage, the essential public purpose of marriage, is to attach mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. And obviously, same-sex couples are different with respect to that purpose. And to bring up infertile couples, even elderly people or even somebody who's lost their womb or something, some people that you know in advance are infertile, that stands the whole rationale for marriage on its head. Because even though some married couples don't have children, the fact is every child has parents, and every child deserves to know who their parents are and who they are, what their genetic background is, what their social, cultural, emotional background is. Every child is entitled to that. So in order to make the same-sex couples equal on their wedding day to the opposite-sex couples, you're telling children that some of them are going to be more equal than others. And I don't think as a society we really have the right to just be doing that, to have the state intervening and creating that kind of structural inequality among different children.
I would cautiously classify Bill O'Reilly as a kind of more than average conservative libertarian on this issue. Do you think he represents what he said about same-sex marriage, who cares kind of a thing? Do you think that he represents what the American people are thinking about same-sex marriage?
Well, I'll tell you, Bill O'Reilly, there are certainly a lot of people who take a kind of what I would call lazy libertarian line on marriage, and I call it a lazy libertarian line. A line because they're saying, oh, what's the difference? Let them do whatever they want. But that's based on them not thinking through too clearly what they're really talking about. So it's true he represents a certain cast of mind. But on the other hand, the uproar that he has created with these comments shows that he certainly does not speak for everybody. And the fact is the Ruth Institute has put together a little video of me basically telling people about the 77 Non-Religious Reasons pamphlet and encouraging people to send it to Bill O'Reilly and tell him to read it. And if he really wants to know some reasons, then we'll tell him some, you know, and to force him to stop ignoring us. And your listeners can go find that right on the homepage of RuthInstitute.org. We're calling it our Bug Bill campaign, you know. It's time to bug Bill O'Reilly until he gets the point that there are some reasons. And if he doesn't know about them, he needs to inform himself. He is, after all, in the news business. And if he doesn't like the reasons, that's fine. He needs to argue about the reasons and not simply have a food fight and ignore people and dismiss and diminish people who disagree with him. That's completely out of bounds. And I don't think real Americans go for that. I think the American sense of fair play says you hear people out and you listen to their arguments and you hear what they have to say. And he's really not doing that in this particular instance. To dismiss whole classes of people as Bible thumpers or those who only thump their Bibles or whatever excuse he's making for himself, there are millions of people that he's dismissing with the wave of his hand there, and there's nothing fair or welcoming or just about behaving like that. He really, I think your listeners and Ruth Institute supporters should call him to account for that, because that's irresponsible on his part.
With only about 30 seconds here, Jennifer, with all that you've said so far here, do you agree with O'Reilly that the states, the individual states, should decide this issue?
I think that's absurd. Honestly, that's absurd. That was a plausible argument 15 years ago, but when you now look at the situation that redefining marriage in Massachusetts is being used as a lever to lever and push federal policy to spread gay marriage across the entire country and to nationalize the policy of recognizing same-sex unions. When you look at that, it's absurd to believe that you can solve this question on a state-by-state basis and that will somehow be stable, a stable final outcome. That's simply not possible. And honestly, he should know that. If he doesn't know that, he's showing that he's really not paying attention to what's going on with the issue, and he's just making noise.
You will find a link to the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. You can click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she has authored the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time answering a question that, well, in the last 2 weeks has been much on the minds of many people, Christians in particular, wondering whether or not the holiday they were about to celebrate, Easter, was really of pagan origin, or maybe still of pagan in nature in some way. Some Christians simply say, well, if I can find something in neo-paganism that talks about a goddess named something like Easter, well, there you go. And others are more ambivalent. Of course, we're now in the season of Easter, so it's still appropriate to ask the question, is Easter a pagan holiday? We'll answer that question with Pastor Joseph Abrahamson right after this.
I'm going to be making the case that postmodernity, rather than dying and going away, has actually become the default setting for the way people think in many of the churches today.
Chris Roseborough, on his presentation, Postmodernism in the Church, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois.
As a result of it, it constitutes a significant threat against biblical, historic, Orthodox Christianity, because its epistemology is extremely irrational, subjective-based, and in fact, it's even a form of enthusiasm, God-withinism, that at the end of the day has as its project the eroding away and deconstructing of what historic Christianity teaches and confesses.
You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Clint Poppy, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, proud supporter of Issues Etc. Each month we host the Nebraska Lutherans for Confessional Study, a serious study of Lutheran theology. We generally meet on the fourth Thursday of each month from 9:30 to 2:30, and both clergy and laity are invited. There is no charge to attend. For more information, please call the church office or visit our website, goodshepherdlincoln.org, and click on the green NLCS tab.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.